Listener supported. WNYC Studios.
It's the Brian Lehrer Show on WNYC. Happy 2nd of July, everybody, at the beginning of what's going to be a holiday week. Long 4-day weekend coming up. We begin today with your reactions to Mayor Bloomberg's remarks about race and the stop and frisk program, that the NYPD actually stops too many whites, he said, not too many people of color, proportionately to who commits violent crime in the city. This broke on Friday after the show, and we haven't gotten to talk about it yet, but it's become the headline in the tabloids and the talk of the mayoral campaign, as well as people of all races in the city reacting to it. It's getting so much exposure. And Mayor Bloomberg reacting to the reaction, which he called fabricated outrage. So let's take a deep breath, listen to the long version of the original audio of what he actually said. Plus, we'll play a whole other clip from that Friday radio appearance that hasn't gotten much replay. And let's talk about this, both on the level of math and sensibility. So listeners, our phones are open for you to weigh in at 212-433-WNYC, 433-9692. Our comments page is open at WNYC.org. Click on Brian Lehrer Show. What do you think of the mayor's math? And if his math was right, are you offended by it anyway? Or is it a fair and relevant point to make when he's being accused of a racially discriminatory stop and frisk policy? The context for this, as I said, was Mayor Bloomberg's weekly appearance on WOR radio this past Friday morning. The topic of stop and frisk came up along with a new bill passed by city council to make it easier to sue the city over racial profiling by the police. And the mayor said this.
Is this business, it's a couple of, one newspaper and one news service, they just keep saying, oh, it's a disproportionate percentage of a particular ethnic group. That may be, but it's not a disproportionate percentage of those who witnesses and victims describe as committing the murder. In that case, incidentally, I think we disproportionately stop whites too much and minorities too little. Well, it's exactly the reverse of what they say. They are. I don't know where they went to school, but they certainly didn't take a math course.
Well, exactly so.
Or a logic course.
Exactly so. Chiming in, John Gambling, who was the host there, Mayor Bloomberg on Friday. Since then, some of the Democratic mayoral hopefuls have denounced the remark, especially Bill Thompson and Bill de Blasio. Here's a little taste of what Thompson had to say.
I found Mayor Bloomberg's comments today on his radio show to be outrageous and insulting. The mayor's comments seem to indicate that if you're black or Latino, you're automatically a murder suspect in the city of New York. You know, I think we all know how ridiculous that assumption is.
But is that what the mayor said? And funny enough, Bloomberg, in that same appearance, had been praising Thompson for being somewhat restrained in his criticism of stop and frisk, knowing that he has his own black stepson, Bill Thompson, who has a fear of crime as well as a fear of being stopped and frisked. So, listeners, are you offended by what Mayor Bloomberg said, and are you offended by it, even if he's statistically right? 212-433-9692. Let's have a non-knee-jerk conversation about the issues raised by all this, no matter what side you're coming from. And as your calls are beginning to come in, let's actually crunch some of the numbers that he's referring to, since he framed it as a data issue. I looked it up. So here are some of the 2012 stop and frisk statistics as released by the NYPD. And I'm reading this from a New York Post article on this on February 9th of this year, a breakdown of stop and frisk by the numbers for last year as reported by the NYPD. Cops made 685,000 stops compared with 533,000 the year before. It's the other way around. Sorry to get off on a bad foot there. Stop and frisks went down substantially in 2012, 533 compared to 685,000. They used stop and frisk to take 780 guns off the streets in 2012. That was a 5% drop from the year before. Now, one of the salient stats that's not racial, but that's a big source of criticism about stop and frisk, is that only 5% of the stops last year ended with a summons being issued and 6% ended with an arrest, according to the NYPD. Those numbers are about the same as the year before. So about race, Commissioner Kelly wrote that the percentage of minorities stopped matched up with suspect descriptions provided by victims of violent crime. The racial breakdown of stops last year stayed roughly the same as in 2011, with 55% being black. The NYPD compared percentages of minorities stopped with the percentage each group represented among violent crime suspects. For example, blacks made up 55% of suspects stopped and 66% of violent crime suspects last year. So that's the source of Mayor Bloomberg suggesting that blacks were stopped and frisked less than perhaps they should have if you go by strict proportions. Hispanics, however, were 32% of the stop subjects and just 26% of the violent crime suspects. This isn't getting talked about very much, but Latinos, by the NYPD's own numbers, were oversampled on stop and frisk. And whites made up 10% of the people stopped and 6% of the violent crime suspects. And again, that's the source of the mayor saying white people were stopped too much. 10% of the people stopped, 6% of the violent crime suspects. Asians, by the way, just 3% of the stopped suspects and only 2% of the violent crime suspects, barely represented in either category. And males, by the way, made up 91% of suspects stopped. I don't see a stat on what percentage of crime suspects were males. Maybe the mayor would say they don't stop women enough, or I don't know, one way or the other. But those are some of the stats. And I'm going to play one more Mayor Bloomberg clip from the WOR, he didn't do it here, the WOR radio show that he did last Friday. But given those numbers, what do you think of Mayor Bloomberg's remark? If he's right for blacks, not right for Latinos, right for whites, does it matter? Are you offended even if his math is right? 212-433-9692. And the mayor tried to put a little social context, I think earlier in the interview, on what he's doing as mayor for the racial disparity in crime.
Most crimes in our city, serious crimes, are committed by male minorities 15 to 25. That's why I got George Soros to put $30 million in. I put $30 million of my own money in, $60 million of the city's money to try to go after this group and help them with mentors and getting IDs and reconnecting to family members, fathers, mothers who aren't there, whatever, normally. And we've got to do that. But when it comes to policing, the police have to be able to go out and stop, look for those that fit the description of a witness or a victim after a crime. And if you can't do that, then, you know, you just turn over the streets to the criminals literally overnight. And it is just so unworkable. And people say, well, you know, cops shouldn't be stopping so many of any one group. That's not the cop. The cop's job is to stop so many of groups fitting the description. It's society's job to make sure that no one group is disproportionately represented as potential perpetrators.
Mayor Bloomberg on Friday. All right, folks, what do you think? Philip in Flushing, you're on the air. Hi, Philip.
Yeah, I'm a Chinese American, and I feel safe. I support Bloomberg. Like old say in America, why you rob a bank? Because of the money was. And when I go home late on the fresh number 7 train, I always feel safe when I see the police officer around.
Philip, the response from some people in other communities might be, well, maybe it's not such an issue in your community. And maybe they're not stopping people so much in your community, and so you feel safer in some abstract reaction to things that are going on in other communities that affect people who are innocent in many cases. And that whether they're stopping and frisking a million people in Bushwick doesn't actually affect whether you're safer in Flushing.
Well,
what would you say to that?
I go to BAM. I go to BAM to see the movie, to see the play.
Yeah.
When I go home, and I take a number one train, I take a D train, and I will try to looking for the police office. I feel safe when they're around. So I think I feel safe now when I go to Berg and go to BAM, you know?
Philip, thank you very much. And Jerry in Sleepy Hollow, you're on WNYC. Hi, Jerry.
Good morning to you. The reason why I'm calling is simply I think that what has happened is that I'm an African American male. I'm 53 years old and I'm 6'1", and I feel that we have been demonized and treated as if, you know, crime has a black face. I just find it ironic that with all the police efforts to stop crime in our neighborhoods, there's not enough efforts really being made in the white community. And what I'm saying is that in regards to drugs and things like that, white people use more drugs and buy more drugs than black people do. And yet the concentration is in our neighborhood. I'm not saying that they shouldn't come in and stop it. I'm for that. But let's be fair. Let's be equal about this. You know, with the amount of young black men being arrested and put in, you know, incarcerated, I think that you know, the same thing should be done in regards to those who are either drug users or carrying weapons in the white neighborhoods. But, you know, this is where we are, and I just feel it's very unfair.
Well, the mayor might say that, yeah, drug use, especially simple drug possession, is one really fraught area. But when you're talking about violent crime, which the mayor was, if the NYPD statistics are accurate, that 66% of the violent crime suspects in the city last year were African American, when the black population is only 25% of the city, and the violent crime suspects were made up only of 10% whites, when they're, I think, 40-something percent of the city, then there is a problem in the black community that needs to be addressed with the kinds of, you know, social programs and equality programs that he was referring to in the final clip. But also, then you can't call out the police for stopping more blacks if they're looking for suspects who fit certain descriptions. So what would your response to that be?
Well, I can't dispute that to a point. All I'm just saying is that I work very hard as an African American man. I work hard. I go home. I sleep. I live in Westchester County, but I do business in the Bronx and in New York City.
Uh-huh.
And I've been stopped numerous times by the police. And I dress pretty, you know, pretty well. And I just find that dressing well doesn't mean a thing. As long as I'm black, I'm going to be stopped.
Jerry, there you go. Thank you very much for chiming in. Call us again. Let's get one perspective on this from Village Voice reporter Graham Raymond. He broke the story in 2010 of an NYPD whistleblower who got on tape instructions that appeared to tell officers to fill quotas by arresting enough people who were doing not much, while downgrading major crime reports to keep their precinct crime stats down. And he has a book coming out shortly that will detail that in book length, called The NYPD Tapes, A Shocking Story of Cops, Cover-Ups, and Courage. Graham, welcome back to WNYC.
Thanks very much, Brian.
Did your reporting relate specifically to stop and frisk?
Yes. The main Schoolcraft made secretly recorded tapes.
That was the officer, Adrian Schoolcraft, was that officer in the 81st, right?
Correct. And what they showed, the most relevant to this debate, is that the sharp increase in stop and frisk were a result of the quota pressure on police officers, and it was coming in every tour, in every precinct. You know, go out and get stops. The tapes even had police bosses ordering stops just to show their bosses that they were out there. In other words, there's mm-hmm. a couple of quotes where they're just told, just go out and get some stops. And so what I believe is that, you know, rather than some overt racism by the police, that the increase in stops was really more related to this constant pressure to make the stops.
The mayor's remarks were based on a comparison between the percentage of people of color stopped and the percentage of violent crimes people of color are suspected of. But is that how stops are determined? Is it really just of people on the street who look like actual suspects who the police are currently searching for? Because I question that in the mayor's framing of the whole thing. I have a feeling it isn't such a neat one-to-one comparison that your only stop, these 500 or 600,000 plus stops in the last few years, were only specifically of people who matched a description of an individual who was actually being sought.
Yeah, the reality is that it's that the percentage of people who are stopped because they fit the description of a suspect is much smaller than other categories, which are much more vague. For example, in the first quarter of 2013, the number of fits description of suspect stops totaled just 17,000. Furtive gesture, which is a very vague category that I still don't quite understand, which could mean anything, were more than 50,000. And stops for people because they were in a high crime area was more than 60,000. So he's over simplifying or kind of distorting the full numbers show.
And as a matter of statistics, there's one other thing that jumped out at me from the 2012 stats compared to the 2011 stats, and that mm-hmm. is that even as the number of stops declined dramatically from 685,000 to 533,000, the murder rate also went down dramatically, in fact, by about the same proportion. And I wonder if you think or you've reported on claims that social scientists make that there actually is not a good relationship between the number of stops and frisks that are performed and the decline in the murder rate that we have seen under Mayor Bloomberg. If the murder rate keeps going down when the number of stops is also going down, then it certainly raises at least a question about the relationship between the two.
Yeah, absolutely it does. And the trend is continuing this year. I mean, I think we've only had I shouldn't say only, but there have been 147 homicides this year.
Right. Homicides are way down again, like 25% down again this year. I don't know about the number of stops, though. Do you?
I do not, actually. I do not. I looked for a second at the numbers yesterday, but I did not get an overall number.
But comparing 2011 to 2012, when they're both going down precipitously, it at least raises a question.
Yeah, I agree. And I think there's some other dynamics here. You know, the city's under a lot of pressure. There's a verdict coming in the Floyd case, which is a stop-and-frisk class action, by the end of the summer. The Justice Department has signaled that they would at least consider or be interested in talking about some sort of federal monitor of the police, which in my 20 years of crime reporting I've never seen of the NYPD. And you have a fairly wide open mayoral campaign. I think all these, and then, you know, maybe there's a little bit of legacy, a thought of legacy by Mayor Bloomberg and Commissioner Kelly that is sort of all those things are coming together into this really contentious debate that we're having this week and last week.
Graham Raymond, staff writer for The Village Voice and author of the forthcoming The NYPD Tapes, A Shocking Story of Cops, Cover-Ups, and Courage. Come back when the book comes out, okay?
Okay, will do.
And thanks for coming on today. Let's go back to your calls. Robert in Valley Stream, you're on the air. Hi, Robert.
Okay, you caught me eating a little bit.
Are you ready?
Yeah, basically what I'm saying is that the high crime areas generally tend to be minorities. And it's usually, let's say, black and black, Latino and Latino, where the crime is. So by stop and frisk, you are reducing the crime, and the crime and the ones who benefit are people of the same minority. Now, it doesn't make sense to all of a sudden just try and raid people coming out of a Taj Mahal just to try and equalize the statistics. Statistics, you have to be very careful how you look at them and to interpret them correctly.
Robert, thank you. Does beg the experiential question, though, of why people in the high crime areas feel not only protected, but also invaded by these police practices. Joe in Washington Heights, you're on WNYC. Hi, Joe.
Hi, good morning. I'm calling as a minority Latino from what is considered, I mean, now a lot less, but historically a high narco traffic area, Washington Heights in New York. And I grew up with stop and frisk as a regular occurrence as a young, you know, male hanging out on corners and just growing up in New York. I understand now as an older person with parents and family members that still live in the community, which I moved out of when I was able to, for, you know, whatever reason. It saves lives, bottom line. I believe it saves lives. It gets guns off streets, and it makes it a nerve-wracking, tough situation to carry a gun in New York City illegally. And that's I can't understand how that could be a bad thing. The disproportionate numbers and whatever the cases that occur, I mean, there could be a million watchdog groups that we could invest money behind or just try to find, you know, funding for. That's fine. I don't mind police being policed. But as far as the actual practice of stopping suspicious-looking people, which is in narco-traffic areas, could be, you know, almost any number of description of you know, males, generally speaking, which, you know, a lot of times there's these violent outbursts, like in Flatbush this weekend, there was, you know, 8 people shot at a party, at a house party by, like, a 17-year-old or something like that. And it's just, you know, on and on, the girl on the bus in Jamaica, Queens, like, we got to get guns out of the hands of people that think it's okay to walk around illegally with a firearm in New York City.
So when the stats are something like 0.01% of the stops actually result in the seizure of a weapon, is it worth it for the invasion of privacy at the minimum of innocent individuals at that pace?
I believe, honestly, for someone I've literally been stopped hundreds of times at this point in my life. I'm 37 years old. Uh-huh. I'm born and raised in New York. I've been here my whole life. I've lived in, you know, 3 of the 5 boroughs. The majority in, you know, Manhattan, uptown, in, you know, Harlem and Washington Heights, as well as, you know, Brooklyn and the Bronx. It doesn't make sense. If you're not doing something wrong, it's a hassle, but it's a necessary, you know, evil, I believe, you know. You know, we have other racial situations, like in as far as, you know, getting a job and all that, you know, the problems where, you know, employability and just availability of resources and things like that. But as far as guns in the hands of criminals and police trying to do their job, you know, another thing that I'm able to relate to now that I'm older, a lot of us guys, you know, I train with them now. I'm not in law enforcement myself, but I train and, you know, a lot of buddies that we grew up with who, you know, grew up in the same circumstances, mm-hmm. now are in law enforcement and have parents that live in these neighborhoods still, right. And understand that it's a necessary thing that you know, in a neighborhood where it's, you know, a known drug area, where right. there's high activity for or propensity for violence, you know, it's just...
Do it and keep it safe. And how about that step for you, as you identified yourself as Hispanic? Hispanics were 32% of the stop subjects and just 26% of the violent crime suspects. So they're oversampling.
Yeah, for sure.
You know, by 25%.
But it's a really, really blurry line because I'm Latino and I identify as one, and you know, by origin I am. But a lot of times in situations, I'm considered black.
Uh-huh.
I'm considered black just from, like, visibly until you know, when you pull out IDs and people's last names come out or something like that. So just from just a police surveillance or a reconnaissance type of a standpoint, mm-hmm. when they jump on the scene, a lot of times they're not assessing the situation racially. They just look like, you know, non-whites grouped up, you know, in suspicious activity looking. And, you know, whether they have a firearm or, you know, some narcotics or whatever, you know, if you're not doing something wrong, it's a terrible inconvenience. But if you've grown up and lived in a neighborhood that is just constantly under siege by, you know, drug dealers,
then you make that trade-off. You know,
I'm sorry?
Then you make that trade-off, you're saying.
I mean, it's something you have to understand that it's vital mm-hmm. for at least to be able to police those streets. I believe that it's something that's absolutely necessary.
Joe, thank you. I'm going to move on and call us again. I appreciate your call. I'm Anata in Brooklyn. You're on WNYC. Excuse me. Mm-hmm. On WNYC. Hello.
Bless you. Hi, Brian.
Hi.
I live on Washington Avenue. When I grew up, when I asked, reference you next to your last caller.
When you grew up, how old are you now?
I'm 15.
Yes.
When I was growing up as a little kid, the bar that is next to my house, it used to be a place for drug dealers, and they would shoot every Friday. The police would come and pick up the bodies on Saturday. And so things have improved because my neighborhood was not the way it used to be. If you walk down Washington Avenue now, it's a whole different story.
Uh-huh.
So if things have gotten better, it's true. But people are still getting stopped, and it's the neighborhood isn't bad at all anymore. I'm African American. If I hang out with my friends, we're all black. We go sit by the museum or the library. We get watched like by the police. It's like a pack of wolves, and it's unfair. I understand that what your last caller was saying, that it does help, and it's a necessary inconvenience, but it is an inconvenience if you're being judged by how you look or by your skin color, because that's what's happening. Because nothing's happening in the neighborhood. People don't do stuff in my neighborhood at all anymore like that. It's really good. People have moved in here from Manhattan and Park Slope for their children because it is a good community, but people are still getting stopped. If there is a group of white teenagers hanging on, the police will not give them a second glance. I was walking by and I saw this guy, he was lighting up weed right in front of the police officers. They didn't do anything to him. Mm. If it had been someone black, it would have been a totally different story. It's unfair. I understand that it's necessary, but over and over again as a teenager, it's wrong. Even if you're not doing something, to be constantly watched makes you act weird and fidgety because you're being watched. It's uncomfortable.
And then they stop you for a furtive movement.
Exactly. So it's a no-win situation. I understand what he's saying. It's a necessary improvement. True. My neighbor, I attest to that. My neighborhood has gotten better. But it's wrong to be judged by how you look or your skin color. I have friends, their parents tell them you cannot dress like a certain way because we don't want you to go out there because the police are stupid and they will judge you because of that. But it doesn't matter because whether you judge or not, you're walking while black. Mm. You're sitting while black. You're hanging out while black or Latino. It doesn't make sense. And then for Mayor Bloomberg to say that we're getting upset and we're not supposed to be getting this upset, it's wrong. He has no idea how it feels. He has no idea how it feels. We see fathers and uncles and cousins and brothers that have to go through this, and then now they're stopping girls too. It's ridiculous. It really is.
And you get the last word on this today. Thank you so much for calling us. Thanks to all of you who weighed in. Obviously, a lot of different experiences of life and neighborhoods and math and perception. And this conversation is going to continue in the city for some time. Obviously, as Mayor Bloomberg gets ready to support candidates with his money who would be willing to uphold the veto of his much-hated racial profiling bill that the city council passed last week, and as this continues to be an issue among the mayoral candidates. So thanks to all of you for calling in. The conversation on that continues online. If you want to continue it online at WNYC.org, click on Brian Lehr Show. And coming up next, look who appeared together in Tanzania yesterday, Barack Obama and George W. Bush. Why their African policies are similar. Next.